Levies, exemptions, a smiling governor. Far fewer smiles in K-12, even higher. A familiar issue and other hot buttons. And Arkansas in world trade. Will it be trumped? Arkansas Week, next.
Arkansas Week is made possible in part by the Arkansas Times, keeping you informed by covering people, events, and politics in Arkansas. By FM 89, KUAR in Little Rock, with in-depth news reporting, analysis, and discussion each weekday.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for joining us for Arkansas Week at the conclusion of week three of the 91st General Assembly. And it's kind of difficult to see what the Hutchinson administration is not getting that it wanted. We'll go into that in the next half hour. Michael Hiblin joins us from KUAR Public Radio in Central Arkansas. John Lyon of the Arkansas News Bureau and Steve Brauner, an independent journalist. And gents, thanks to everyone for coming in. Steve, we'll start with taxes. A lot of give and take, but mostly it's giving the administration pretty much what it is seeking.
Well, for the second time, Governor Hutchinson has asked for a tax cut. This time it was for lower income Arkansans with incomes below $21,000 a year, and that's pretty much already done. He's gotten what he wanted on that, exactly what he wanted. Along with that is a promise or the creation of another task force that will focus on a complete overhaul of the tax code in Arkansas. Then yesterday, moving through the legislature, is a tax cut, a military exemption for military retiree benefits. And that got through. This is the one area where the governor has not gotten exactly what he wanted. He offered three exemptions to legislators, one of which was raising the exemption on manufactured homes as a way to pay for the military retirees' tax cuts and getting rid of that exemption. That ran into some problems because, as people pointed out, you're cutting taxes on people making lower incomes and then you're raising taxes on the homes that they typically buy. So it did not get passed. Instead, it was replaced with other exemptions. The governor was fine with that. The ending of exemptions on some digital downloads and on candy and soda pop. That was the tax cut. The taxes were raised back to 6.5% instead of being cut. So that's how that's being paid for. So that right now, that is really the only thing that he's really not gotten pretty much exactly what he wanted.
Well, he's still smiling. I mean, the big picture, he is still his.
This is his second session, and he's cut taxes by more than $150 million.
All right. So, falling by the wayside was I guess predictably, was a Democratic alternative offered by a gentleman from Little Rock, Mr. Sabin, in the House, which would have created, in effect, an Arkansas version of the earned income tax credit. Mike?
Yeah, right after the vote was taken in the House and Senate on Monday, Representative Sabin was to present his bill. He opted to delay it by a day, wanted to be able to meet with the governor, see if there could be some kind of compromise. He was hoping that perhaps they could somehow work together and that both bills could exist. But the governor wasn't willing to go along with that. Representative Sabin did present his bill on Tuesday and essentially described himself a little bit like the lamb that's being led to slaughter. You know, he knew there was no chance of getting his through, but still presented it, and it was shot down.
Well, I mean, he is hopeful that it would be considered by the task force that's going to be looking at future tax reform.
Right. Well, there were some complaints, not a great many, simply because the numbers aren't there in terms of the partisan divide. That even, as Steve alluded to, even though the income tax reduction was targeted at those at 21K or under, that some equity was being lost or sacrificed.
Well, that's one reason.
Taxing unemployment, the digital download aspect.
Right. And, you know, the military retiree tax cut is not going to lower income Arkansans. It'd be going to people who are coming off of making a pretty good living. But it was seen as, first of all, as a fairness issue. Second of all, is we certainly would love to have to honor people who served the country. And the third is that this is a very highly sought-after group of people who have skills and work ethics and no drug history. And so we wanted to attract as many people as we can to Arkansas. So really, that was just a trade-off that was made. The fact is, whether or not the EITC was a good thing or not, if you want to get something done and you're a Democrat, you better have a lot of Republican sponsors to your bills this time. It's just going to be tough to get something through if it's yours. And the governor already had his lower income tax cut planned. He already had it budgeted, and there just wasn't going to be room for another one.
Working on it for most of a year.
Right.
Or longer.
Right. I mean, these things are pretty much already, the governor is loath to go against, once the budget is set, anything that could maybe take away from what is said, he's going to have a lot of trouble supporting.
Oh,
I didn't have anything to add.
Precisely that reason, he says, Mr. Hutchinson looked askance at a school voucher program that its advocates insisted was not a voucher program, but which opponents said, hey, you're going to take anywhere from 10 to 15 million out of general revenue.
Right. It's estimated that proposal by Representative Jim Dotson of Bentonville would cost $10 million in the first year because it has a cap of $10 million that people could donate to nonprofits, which would then provide the education savings accounts that families could use to send their kids to private schools. People would donate their money, would donate to the nonprofits, and then they would get a tax credit equal to what they donated. And so that's the system that prevents state money from going directly to private schools.
And the superintendents just love that idea.
Well, they're going to be, a student is money. It's $6,600 in foundation funding for each student that goes to your school. And plus, really, when you add it all up, it's $10,000 to $11,000 per student. And when you lose a student, you lose that money. But you still have the school building, you still have the teachers. If you lose enough students, then it begins to be, then you may be, the numbers would work out, but you still have the building to take care of. So schools always are going to have a problem when they're losing students.
And this is not in the governor's budget, so that's why he has a problem with it.
Well, if you calculate that based on that formula, which nobody, I don't think Steve disputes, if you lose, say, three or four students to a charter or some other form of K-12, you're talking about the salary of a teacher.
Right.
Not to mention some other operational expenditures.
So if you lose three students, you have lost the equivalent of a teacher's salary, or three or four, maybe four or five students. But you still have the classroom, and you can't necessarily get rid of the teacher because you still have 26 other students in that classroom.
Still got to pay the light bill.
The economics are pretty difficult. You want more and more students until you come to the point when you got to build a building, if you're a school.
Well, others raised a constitutional objection as well, and that's that the accounts could be used to underwrite parochial school education.
Right, and the way that Representative Dotson is trying to get away from that is that the money does not go directly to, it's not state dollars going to the students and their parents. It is private dollars going to them that are then being subsidized through a tax credit.
Tax credit by the state.
Right.
Now, we had action on the higher ed front as well. That continues to move.
Yeah, we had a meeting of the House Education Committee that is considering this change, and it was approved, basically moving away from funding for colleges and universities based on enrollment to what's called outcomes-based funding. And that's where you look more at the number of students completing degrees, how long it takes for them to do that, how many graduates they have, how many of those then actually get jobs in their degree field or maybe move on to get other degrees. And this has been a key thing that the governor has been pushing for. And he had his director of higher education, Maria Markham, come out and speak in favor of this. And the governor has also said that if lawmakers go along with this, he will approve an increase in funding for higher education, about $10 million. Funding this year was flat, $733 million out of the state's overall $5.3 billion budget. Proponents say it would also help minorities and underrepresented communities, but you had some, like Representative John Walker, Democrat of Little Rock, express a lot of concern about this, said that this would benefit your larger schools, ASU, University of Arkansas, whereas the smaller community colleges would be negatively impacted. As he put it, it would make the weak weaker and the strong stronger. Now, Director Markham said that that this would actually benefit results, and said that to try and minimize the impact that this might have, they would cap any funding increases or decreases for schools at 2% per year. But this advanced out of committee, moving to the full House, and then it will also go to the Senate for consideration.
Well, money's money, but divided however it might be among more than 30 four- and two-year institutions.
That's not much.
After flat funding, you know, after years of essentially flat funding, would seem to be something less than a bonanza.
Yeah. There were also concerns that this was essentially a shell bill at this time. Representative Jenna Della Rosa, a Republican from Rogers, said that was a key concern, that there weren't enough specifics in this bill. Now, Director Markham came back and said that, well, this is how education funding has typically always been done. It will come back to the Legislative Council for rules to be approved, but this seems to be getting support, and it's another one of the governor's priorities that is going through.
Well, most of the presidents and chancellors are on board with it.
They are, and so are the Association of Two-Year Colleges. They also are on board. So it has been surprising that they're embracing it. There is some nervousness out there, because there's going to be some winners and there's going to be some losers, and it's based on how well your students had advanced and that you're meeting the state's goals. But so far, there's general agreement. The $10 million is not much money at all, but higher ed funding has been flat now for really two decades. No more money, not adjusted for inflation, no more money. And so even $10 million is a way to maybe get some traction and momentum to hopefully, they're hoping for more money in the future.
Well, they won't send it back if they get it.
That's right.
On the agenda, anyway, of so-called social legislation, it was a very active week. And of course, the headline issue was abortion. Senate completed action Thursday on a bill that is destined to draw legal opposition, but then again, every abortion bill does.
Yeah, the ACLU already vowing that it will fight this.
Mm-hmm. What it would do is it would ban a procedure known as dilation and evacuation, and the bill calls it dismemberment abortion. Supporters of it say that it's a barbaric practice. Defenders of it say that it is the most safe and most common method of abortion in the United States in a second trimester abortion. So there's sure to be a challenge. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that states cannot burden a woman's right to obtain an abortion before the fetus becomes viable or able to live outside the womb. And this bill does not say anything about viability. So it is sure to face a constitutional challenge. The governor signed it shortly after it passed out of the Senate.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any exception for rape or incest. The only exception it does allow is if there is a serious health risk to the mother. But the rape and incest was brought up during the debate on Thursday.
To which the sponsor said, well, there's nothing to stop someone from getting a different kind of abortion if they have a pregnancy resulting from rape or incest.
Huge majorities, only a handful of votes in each chamber against.
Right, and basically this all abortions in Arkansas, virtually all, and in fact all, in the year that we've looked at, in the second trimester we're done this way. But you know, this is a Republican legislature now, and it did not have any trouble getting through or getting signed.
On to marijuana. Where are we? I mean, this is back and forth and back and forth.
Well, we
Michael,
had,
you've been on it.
Yeah, the governor.
The issue, I mean.
yes, the governor signed two marijuana bills into law on Monday that would delay implementation, one aspect of this beyond the requirement set in the amendment. This would delay implementation by two more months. There was also another bill regarding how doctors, I believe it's don't have to now give a patient a written statement saying that the medical benefits outweigh the health consequences of smoking marijuana. But we had that go through, and it's basically because they say more time is needed to implement this, to put the regulations in place. But you also have a fight going on here. In particular, Senator Jason Rapert, Republican of Conway, who is fighting this, he's saying that this goes against federal law. At this point, the federal government does not challenge states that do have laws in place allowing medical marijuana or even recreational marijuana. Senator Rapert, in a letter he sent to the Attorney General asking for further clarification on this on Thursday, pointed out that it was President Obama who appointed the Justice Department to ignore the federal law on this. Governor Hutchinson has said that pretty much Arkansas voters knew what they were doing, had a clear image in mind when they approved this and what the idea of marijuana is, that it is people smoking marijuana, and has suggested maybe we do need further clarification from the government, but the general consensus is that this has been approved by voters and it's a constitutional amendment. Anything that changes that requires a two-thirds vote. And most people seem to be going along with this at this point. But yes, you do still have some resistance on this. Senator Rapert's bill filed, I think, Thursday would say that the state will not implement this until after the federal government lifts its law banning this that was put in place, I think, 1970.
John, Steve?
Well, the most of the bills that have been filed in the legislature on medical marijuana were filed by Representative Douglas House of North Little Rock, and they are intended to help carry out the will of the voters, and that's how he's explained the bills. When people have raised the objections, well, I don't know about taking out this requirement for doctors to make that declaration, or I don't know about conflicting with federal law, Representative House has said, I opposed the medical marijuana amendment, but what I'm trying to do is help carry out the will of the people. And Senator Rapert is saying, let's just not implement this program at all as long as it conflicts with federal law. Regardless of what the voters voted, he said in a statement that I believe in carrying out the will of the voters, but not if it conflicts with federal law.
And the bill that was passed that allowed doctors to simply certify that their patients had the condition versus certifying that it was more helpful than harmful, that was a really good signal, because basically the way it was written, according to Representative House, few doctors would have been willing to certify their patients. It required a two-thirds vote to pass, and it did pass. So really, if you're going to kill medical marijuana, that was the bill to oppose to do it, because even if it's legal, doctors aren't going to want to do it for liability reasons. So it got through with two-thirds votes. So whether or not we're going to have a vote to actually ignore the amendment, to void it, it would need also to get two-thirds vote. That's going to be, that would require a complete reversal of what's already happened.
And there was, I think the governor said that, I don't know if he was he or another lawmaker, but that the feeling is if we don't implement this as medical marijuana, then there might be another amendment that would likely pass allowing any use of marijuana, the thought that the will of the voters is clear at this point?
Well, it's clearer than the air, no pun intended. Is everything still hazy? Mr. Rapert has a point here. It still remains a scheduled substance, and the cloud, if you will, is omnipresent.
We don't know.
The financial community, the medical community?
We don't know what the Trump administration's position is going to be on medical marijuana.
And he has, though, said maybe a few months ago that he supported medical marijuana, but we haven't heard anything recently.
Okay, moving on to voter ID, revived again.
Yeah, this essentially, yes, an attempt. There was a bill passed and
now we have heard from the Trump administration on that.
Yeah, very much so. In 2013, the legislature passed a voter ID law. The governor then, Mike Beebe, vetoed it. It was overridden with a simple majority. This one has been revamped a little bit, and the House Committee on State Agencies and Governmental Affairs approved it. Representative Mark Lowry said this one has been crafted differently so that it won't get, I should say first that it was tossed out by the Arkansas Supreme Court back in 2014, basically saying that this imposed another requirement or oversight or basically in the laws of how people
conditions,
yes. And again, that was with just a simple majority. This time, this newly revamped went through a two-thirds vote, and it was worded in a way that Representative Lowry said that this time he thinks, number one, this isn't imposing a new condition on voting, but that it is more about the registration. Said it has been carefully worded. There's also the thought that this will get the there's a different makeup now on the state Supreme Court, and that based on the people who dissented with the opinion a few years ago, he thinks this now could withstand a challenge.
And guns on campus specifically.
That has come back again. You still have opposition to it, but once again, we're seeing legislation that would allow guns on campus. I don't know the exact status on this.
Actually, it would require campuses to allow their staff members to carry a concealed
faculty
weapon.
And staff.
That we have laws on the books that make it possible for staff members. Schools, universities can choose to allow their staff members to carry a weapon, and it included an opt-out provision, and all of them opted out. Every single university, the public college university, said, no, we will not let our staff members to carry on campus. This law by Representative Charlie Collins from Fayetteville would require schools to allow their staff members who have a license to carry a weapon on campus. Collins' own local school in Fayetteville, University of Arkansas, is opposed to that. But he says it is a way to be sure that someone has a gun in case there's somebody, you know, there's a shooter on campus. There's somebody there perhaps who can make him, maybe stop him. The universities and colleges say, we want to set our own security policies. This is not the way we want to do it. So this is going to be pits two aspects of conservatism against each other. One would be the ability of people to bear arms and protect themselves. The other is the idea of local control, letting people who are closest to the action make the decision rather than coming down from a higher level of government. So that's where the argument's going to be as the session continues.
Okay, finally, Arkansas and the world. Mr. Hutchinson had a little chat with a few of us Thursday, immediately after the President of Mexico canceled his chat with that had been planned with President Trump. Mr. Hutchinson pronounced himself concerned at anything that interferes or might limit Arkansas's role in global commerce, Michael, which is in the hundreds of millions of dollars every year.
Yeah, concerned that if we put this, any kind of like the 20% import tax suggested by Donald Trump, that if you put any kind of limitations in place, there could be retaliatory action, and that would impact the export of key Arkansas commodities or rice. There are a lot of things that Arkansas exports. It's also important for a lot of Arkansas companies. And he called it concerning that this has the potential to impact Arkansas in a lot of ways.
15% of Tyson Foods sales, overall sales, go to Mexico. And, quote, we had rather not speculate. The Arkansas Farm Bureau, the goal is to maintain and expand exports. Although, quote, Mexico is obviously a significant export market for Arkansas. Walmart, no comment other than it is hopes to be part of the conversation, as a spokesman said just before airtime. What we don't know is exactly what we're dealing with here, because the Trump administration keeps walking this thing back and forth, and of course it has to deal with the congressional block as well.
Yeah, and there are a lot of variables out there. I mean, I was reading a fascinating report just about the Kansas City Railway, which runs through West Arkansas, north and south, and has lines coming up all through Mexico, and it's the impact on that one company, some people say, could be devastating if you put these kind of limitations in place. A whole lot of unknowns that have a lot of people very nervous.
We know we're out of time. Guys, thanks to you for coming in. As always, thanks to you for watching. Have a good weekend. See you next week.
Arkansas Week is made possible in part by the Arkansas Times, keeping you informed by covering people, events, and politics in Arkansas. By FM89, KUAR in Little Rock, with in-depth news reporting, analysis, and discussion each weekday.